For members only, Golf Smarter number 208 for December 8, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Evaluating your golf outlook. Part 2 with John Grund.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for your continued support of the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by the Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com, where you only have a few weeks left to save 30% on the Tour Tempo Micro Player. As of December 31st, we'll still have units available, but the best price we'll be able to offer is $84.95 plus shipping. So act now, and as a Golf Smarter member, you'll save an additional $15 at golfsmarter.com. I'm telling you, of all the products that come through my path, training aids, this is the one that I keep taking with me to the golf course and the driving range. It's incredible, but all this junk sitting around here, I got this little putting laser thing the other day, and it's like, what the hell is this? And I tried it and was really enthusiastic about it and hated it. So I'm telling you, I really like the Tour Tempo Micro Player, and I think that you will too, especially to groove your swing in the off season so you're raring to go when you start playing again next spring.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast. It's good to be here.
we just finished. No, you know, if you've been listening to the last episode, you know that this is a continuation of the last episode, and I wanted to just pick up right where we left off, and that is for those players who aren't PGA Tour players, for those players who don't start when they're 8 years old and have those teachers that are golf teachers, these are guys who with families
right.
that are working,
right.
and they've fallen in love with golf,
right.
but they don't know. They know they need to get a teacher. They mm-hmm. just don't know how to find a good teacher or the right teacher for them, and that's mm-hmm. where I want to head with you right now.
First of all, quickly, find somebody you like seeing once a week or once every 2 weeks or once a month or whatever it's going to be. Find somebody you like personality-wise. That's important.
Okay,
you know, unless you're just unless you just want a little abuse, you know, and maybe you know that could be your thing too, you know. But hopefully, you find somebody that's got a personality that you find you like being around. I don't say you have to love the person, but you need to respect them a little bit, respect their knowledge of the game, and feel that they're getting you on the right track, and.
What kind of questions should they ask?
Personality.
Yes, I guess.
I think you know it's more important what the pros actually asking you. Hmm. You know, it's like going to see a doctor. How do I interview a doctor? You know, a good doctor listens. That's what all good doctors do.
Right, and in a graduating class of 500 at medical school, the guy who is the last person to graduate from his class is still called
doctor.
Doctor.
Right, so right.
Doesn't mean he's a good doctor or not, but he's a doctor.
Well, and you know, down the road, I mean, I'm not sure I want to overly draw the parallel between a you know, somebody that's a medical doctor and a golf professional. They're so different position, you know, different professions, but they do have their similarities. And you know, sometimes a golf pro is as much a psychologist. I mean, I there was periods in my life where I've given lessons to people for 10, 12 years. So you get to know that person.
Sure.
You get to know about their family, about what's going on, their kids that are born, their grandchildren that are born. You know, you're part of that person's life. That's an interesting thing. It's an interesting dynamic. So I think finding somebody that you like being around, and then find out if that person asks you the right questions, and if he's listening to you, you know, if he cares, you know. In today's world, does he send you an occasional email asking you how you played and your member guest? That's important. I think, you know, because if it's just a 30-minute lesson and you paid him and you walk away, yeah, okay, you know. And if that's cool for you and you're getting better, I'm okay with that too. But you know, you got to treat the whole person. Again, I bring this, like I talked earlier, the golf game is about the whole person, not about the golf swing as much as we want to make it out to be. And I can talk mechanics till we come home. I can talk to you.
Yes, I know.
For a long, long time. Seriously, I really
and
can.
You know how much I love mechanics.
And right. And you know, I think, you know, some of the most interesting things I've ever heard read in my lifetime were said by Albert Einstein. And I don't understand physics very well, if at all, except for maybe how they apply to the golf swing a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You do.
I do. But, I mean, certainly not in those terms. Interesting guy, huh?
Somewhat.
Right?
A little disheveled.
I had the opportunity to spend some time with a man named Albert Penzias. And I don't know if you know who he is.
You scared me. I thought you were going to say I spent some time with Albert Einstein.
No, like, I think I'm pretty sure it's Mr. I called him Mr. Penzias. I think his first name is Albert Penzias, but it may not be Albert's first name. But he was Mr. Yeah. And he was a Nobel Prize winner, and he won it for he was on a team that nailed down the theory that basically supported the concept of the Big Bang Theory.
Wow.
Right? So, you know, and he started out, you know, interesting guy, just started out with doing some, you know, is in the military, and he discovered why homing pigeons home. You know, just a curious guy, but a very interesting man, very quiet. And my wife was kind of surprised because he never talks to anybody, and I don't know why he wanted to talk to me. And the reason why he did was we sit down in the back of his home in Stinson Beach, and we're out looking at the lagoon there, and it's just a beautiful lagoon, you know, where the birds are. And I grew up, my father raised finch, and I raised racing pigeons as a kid, and so birds have always been fascinating. We had a cabin growing up, and I always loved birds. And I'm fortunate to be around golf courses, you know, and see some just amazing birds. I'll tell them, "Oh, that's a woodfinch, honey." You know, it's a what? that's a western scrub jay. You know, it's a little different than the eastern scrub jay. You know, I just know these things, you know, because I've always been fascinated. So we're talking. He says, "Well, my kids were sitting back here. My grandchildren, Mr. Penzias says, were in this lagoon for, you know, eight hours yesterday without ever coming out, or 7 hours or whatever it was there. You know, how could they do that? You know, he says, it's just amazing. You know." He goes, "I find that really fascinating." He didn't say how they could do that. I think he knew why they could do that, because they thoroughly enjoyed what they were doing. And I bring this back to a golf pro. Golf pro should thoroughly enjoy what he's doing.
Right.
You know, and that comes out pretty quickly. He's enthusiastic about what he is doing. He's enthusiastic about who you are and what you have to bring to him as a person and as a game. And then, you know, he needs to have the little bit of caginess of how do I teach this person? Because, you know, another thing, not all learn the same way. Some people learn visually. Some people learn through hearing. Some people are more kinesthetic. They learn by feel, by touch. So, you know, there is a little bit of intuition there on the pro to figure this out from that person. That's why you want that first interview. Tell me about yourself. What have you done? If a guy comes to you and says, you know, I'm a musician. So what am I going to show him? A bunch of videos and how his golf game's going to get better? Probably not. I might talk to him a little bit about rhythm, about some timings, maybe things that he understands, you know? If a person comes to me and says, well, I played quarterback at Boise State, and then, you know, I did this. I said, oh, okay, now we got a different program, right?
Sure.
And we probably got some injuries, so let's talk about those too, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I mean, well, whatever, you know? And so people learn differently. And so you have to have a professional maybe that's agile enough to be able to go. And sometimes they don't work, you know. Sometimes you may find somebody, you take a lesson. And I think it's also okay to take lessons from several pros over a period of time.
Really?
Yeah. Why not?
That's not too confusing?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think of golf schools doing a 3-day intensive?
Great.
3 or 4 day,
yeah. All for it.
Yeah.
All for it.
Yeah,
I really do. I mean,
if there's follow-up.
Well,
see, that's my problem with the golf schools. Yeah. It's like they just strip you down to the bare nothing, mm-hmm. and then build you back up. And then after 3 days, you've got this great new golf swing. And 15 minutes later, you go to a golf course and you completely can't figure it out. And there's no one there to ask.
You know, but, you know, I'll tell you what. But, you know, there's a lot of times I've been standing in the middle of nowhere, walking to my car, and I three putted the last hole. I bogeyed 17, lost a tournament by shot. And I'm thinking, huh. I'm pretty alone right now myself. You know? That's part of golf. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
So deal with it. How do you deal with that? That's okay. You know? It's all right. It's all right to fall down. You got to get back. You get back up. Good players get back up. Try the next day. That's what you do. That's how you get better at golf. You fail all the time at golf. That's the thing. You just do. I mean, if you ask Tiger how many good shots he hit in his last round, you might say 6 or 7. How many really good shots? Well, I only hit about 3 really good shots. Why'd you shoot? Well, I shot 67. Really? You only hit 3 really good shots? Yeah. Because, and this is what I want to talk, you know, we talked about this earlier when we sat down and had lunch, is that, you know, it's just a matter of connecting the dots. It's not personal. golf is not really about pars and bogeys and double bogeys and birdies and eagles. It's really not. We want to make it out that because we want to experience these highs and these lows and get all this stuff. And the reality is just how I personally go out and connect my dots around the golf course.
Yeah, explain that a little more, what you mean by connecting the
dots. Well, let me just support this about different take lessons from different pros.
Okay.
I think it's okay at the end of the day. If you start to formulate, because now you'll know. I mean, how many teachers does it take you to find that really good teacher? In school, to know all of a sudden when you're, you know, you get that aha moment when you get that professor. I don't know who he was. For me, it was Hans Berwald, right? I ended up minoring in Japanese, you know, politics. And Hans was a smart guy. I had a lot of teachers before him, and I said, wait a minute, this is the real deal. Mm. This guy lived in Japan, grew up in London, was educated in Hong Kong, you know, spoke Chinese, spoke Japanese, spoke some other languages, and, you know, he was part of there in the Reformation of Japan at the end of World War II, and this guy was there, he lived it, he did it, and he understood it on a lot of different levels, and he understood, because I was a political science major, he walked the walk, and I had a lot of teachers before I met him, and a lot of had great qualities, but Hans was the right guy at the right time for me, and, you know, I really, education kind of shifted gears for me at that point. I was always fascinated by it, but played a lot of golf and did some other things. If it hadn't been for golf, I probably would have gone more that direction, I think. But, you know, so we all have that aha moment, but you have maybe you have some other instructors along the way. Okay. And maybe you meet the right instructor right off the right out of the box.
How would you know?
but, you know, if you're getting better and you're meeting your goals and objectives, then that's good.
Then stay with it.
That's good. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of us are searchers by nature.
Don't try to make improvements quickly. Right,
right. Right. Well, a lot of us are searchers and wanderers. And you know, as golf pros, we see them. Because, you know, even where I teach now, hey, did you give a lesson to, you know, Mr. Smith last week? Yeah, I gave him lessons last year. And he took lessons from the other pro the year before. Mm-hmm. And so I find it interesting when I find people like that because I find the real job is I haven't convinced him what the truth about golf is yet. Mm-hmm. There's some different truth levels to golf. The mechanics are pretty straightforward, really, at the end of the day. It's a question of how they're applied. And then, you know, the learning capabilities, learning skill sets, those are a different thing. You know, if a guy's still taking lessons from people to people, you know, I'm finding that, one, his scores aren't going down. My thing is, why aren't his scores going down? You know what? Because probably nobody's taking any time to take him out on the golf course and show him how to hit a chip or a pitch shot properly. Show him how to make the right decision with the right golf club. Who cares about golf swing? Which brings me back to the point about connecting the dots. Because that's really what golf's about. Golf's not per, you know, when they invented the game of golf, there wasn't a par written on the scorecard over there in St. Andrews. It was, you know, it was the 18 holes. And when the wind blew this way off the North Sea, it played this. And when the wind blew that, it played that. I mean, it was all relative. The only thing we know for sure, it was 18 holes because that's about what a time it took 18 shots of scotch, I think. You know, so, you know, and God bless him for that. But, you know, I think, so they understood that the game was a game played outdoors, that it was subject to all sorts of travails from Mother Nature, from personal spirit, from everything else. And so they played it that way. They played it from end. They knew it wasn't over till you put the hole in at the last putt. So it wasn't about my handicap, because that's an invention of modern times. It wasn't about my par or this or that. It was just, how many shots did it take me there? And the rule of the day is to play the ball as it lies. That's it. And then you're done. And there's a journey in between there of all sorts of things that go on. And there's the beauty of the game, right? And so we've, you know, added the things like pars and birdies and bogeys and stuff so we can have handicaps. So Fred and John can go out. If John's a +2 handicap and Fred's a 12 handicap, we can go out and compete for the day and still kind of have the same game and have fun doing that. So that brings me to the point, well, I made par on the last hole. I'm really a great person right now. But then I make triple on the next hole. Well, I'm not so good right now. You know, and then we play this, we have this emotional battle all day long. And it becomes a lot more about ego than it really does about this personal journey around the golf course for the day. And about how I relate myself to my clubs, to that golf shot, to produce the best shot that I'm capable of producing in that moment. And that ultimately is the secret of the alchemy of producing good golf, is to be in those moments and do the best that you can with what you have to give in that moment. And that's what, and I bring it back to the athletes. That's why a lot of these athletes and these actors are attracted to the game now, I think, because they get that sort of relationship. That that's how they learned how to play football. That's how they learned how to play basketball. That's how they learned how to play hockey. Because they, over periods of time, they took little steps to become that best person. They made those sacrifices along the way. And that's why CEOs of businesses are attracted to the game. Because they sacrificed at some point. They learned little bits of information, and they kept on applying them and applying them. And they tried. They got a new situation, a new problem to solve. Because golf is just about a series of problems that you solve. That's it. I'm faced with this shot right now. How much good information? If I'm a CEO, how much good information can I get for my staff? Usually that's just you on the golf course. So the staff is me. How much do you know? What? How far am I away from the pin? Where's the ball sitting? Is it above my feet? Below my feet? Is the ball? Am I down grain on the grass? Is the grass coming into me? Is that pin sitting up? And if the pin's sitting up and it's late in the day and there's a wind blowing, guess what? The green's probably going to be firm because it's exposed to the wind. And these are things I learn over time, and I accumulate all this information. And this all happens in 45 seconds or whatever before I hit a golf shot, or a minute. You know, Lee Trevino was the famous guy for talking and chatting. Believe me, his brain was all on that golf ball. He deflected. He chatted because he was nervous. He was the most shy guy in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, he never talked to anybody in the PGA Tour outside of the golf course. Hell, he holed up in a hotel. He ate pizza with Herman there most of his life. And his closest friend of his life was Herman. He had dinner with only one guy in the PGA Tour in, 25 years, basically.
Really?
Yeah, it was not even the guy you'd think. It was Dave Hill's brother. I can't think of Dave Hill's brother's great player. Was playing the senior tour up until recently. I think he still plays a little bit. And that, for some reason, he and Trevino would spend some off-season time together, and they knew each other. But I'm just saying that's how you play better. Is, you know, that's one of the secrets here, is learning how to manage yourself around a golf course and not taking it personal. People ask me, why is Tiger the best player in the world? Tiger's the best player in the world because he lacks ego. What? He lacks ego?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because, you know, we've seen him get upset. We've seen him angry.
But
he's got this aloof character in interviews.
Let me clarify that. Tiger almost always hits the shot that he's capable of hitting. He very rarely hits a shot that he's not capable of playing.
And we do that all the time.
Correct.
All the time?
Yes.
I mean, it's like one of my favorite sayings is never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
Right.
But we do it all the time.
Right, right. And we're always...
And you're saying right. that's... That is
you
not
don't
part
see,
of Tiger's
You don't
game.
See Tiger doing many Vandevelds, right?
Yeah.
You just don't. You don't. And that's the and
trying to remember.
Correct. It just doesn't happen. Now, he'll hit some bad shots.
Right.
But I can guarantee you can go back and drop a bag full of balls and probably hit 80% of them pretty dang good.
Yeah.
You know. And so he's able to...
It's not supreme confidence. It's not arrogance. It's...
Correct. It's just... It's
no ego. You're
saying it's very tactical. He's a general at war. Hmm. He's a golf warrior. You know, that's what people don't understand about golf pros. Golf pros are golf warriors. They're not golfers. Most people are golfers. A warrior is a different story. You can wake up at any moment, drop out of bed, and go shoot 68. I don't care if you're in the Maldives playing in some weird golf course with Bermuda grass that's way too long and crappy greens and 110 degree weather and you're eating weird food. You go out and shoot 68.
I'm going to make you tell me this story because right now, the show that we're doing right now, this is the premium version. So this is HBO versus,
being
on Fox.
Right, right.
So we could say whatever we want. So tell me the story of what it takes to be a golf professional on tour.
Again, I bring it back to the golf warrior story,
yeah,
which is,
yeah.
You know, are parallel, or, you know, that as a warrior, you know, your job every day is to get up and do whatever your job is, you know, it's defend your country, which we fortunately have a lot of men and women do for us right now. They're warriors, you know, and they sacrifice, make humongous sacrifices. And as a golfer, that's what you do. I mean, your life, you know, there's an old joke around the PGA Tour is, you know, enough about me. How do you really feel about me? Because let me tell you something, if you're a golf pro, and I don't care how, and there's a lot of benevolent golf pros out in the world, and they're very nice people, they really are, but at the end of the day, your world's about you, because no one else is watching out for you. I don't have Mike Singletary figuring out where I got to be in a plane, what hotel I'm going to be staying at, right. and my trainer's going to be there to get me wrapped, and what plays we're going to go over, and in the heat of the moment, he's going to call in a play, and we're all going to, no, you're on your own, buddy, that's it. So you got to be able to manage yourself really well while you're on the road. And you got to be able to go out. And so every decision you make, anybody that comes in contact with you, they better be on your program. Because if they're not, you got to get them out of your life. That's it. I mean, you can have some little mild entertainment once in a while. But either they believe in Fred Green or John Grund, or they got to go someplace else. You don't have time for them. They either believe in your goals and your objectives and what you're trying to achieve in your life, and you need to surround yourself with people that are like-mindedness. That's what I tell my juniors all the time. It's really important. Surround yourself with people with like-mindedness, whether it's becoming a good student, whether it's becoming a good athlete, whether it's becoming just a good person. That's the end of the deal. That's the secret. So the warrior part of it is, I had a friend of mine spending some time at the Masters 1 year, and he ended up spending some time with Seve Ballesteros and another golf professional on the PGA Tour, whose name I won't mention at this time, but and my friend was there with them, and they were sitting in one of the residences at Augusta, and it came up. He was a young professional that had some success, and he said, "How do I remain successful at golf? How do I really be successful at golf?" And surprisingly, what came out of Seve's mouth was something that you wouldn't expect. The first one was you got to be able to eat anything, at any time, anywhere. So now we're talking about a guy that's playing in Europe back in the 80s, the late 70s, 80s, when, you know, travel was a little more difficult and, you know, things weren't quite as sleek and, you know, and probably weren't staying in, you know, didn't have homes all over the place and stuff. But still, you know, you got to be able to eat food, different food. And, you know, you travel 300 miles and you're in a different cuisine. You know, here 300 miles is still Burger King, right? But, you know, in Europe may be different, but it's still relative. Golf's become an international game, so there's still a little bit of relevance to that aspect of it. So you got to be able to eat, and eat at different times. You know, you understand that, you know, you might be a person who wants to eat at 5 o'clock. Well, if you just jump on a plane and fly to Beijing, you know, you got to be able to eat dinner. Maybe your breakfast time, but you got to be able to swallow down the pork chops or whatever it is you're eating, you know. So eat whatever you can and you know, be smart about it. Don't eat just junk food. Try to modify it to the best of your ability, but you got to be flexible on the food thing here. Your stomach's got to be able to handle that. And then the other thing is you got to be able to sleep and eat. Where? Now, that's a tough one. Now, I was watching Lee Westwood just recently, and when he won his tournament, and he said they call him Half Man. His joke on the tour, the guy asked him, well, how'd you sleep last night before, you know, you won this $1 million tournament today? You know, you were leading. He goes, well, you know, the joke on the European tour is I'm half man, half mattress. So I sleep fine. You know, Gary Player was famous. You know, one of my heroes is Gary Player, and that, you know, here's a very small, diminutive man that changed his physique, changed the way he perceived himself first, and then went out and changed his body to fit the job that he needed to do, which was jumping on planes, flying out of Africa, and go win in the United States. Now, that was somebody nobody was doing back in the 60s
Sure. And
the 50s. Very few. There was a few guys that did it, but not many. So he was one of the first international golf stars, in my opinion, and did it in times that were pretty challenging. And so that sleep in anywhere, Gary Player was famous for being able to just sleep on a plane for 8 hours. Just gone. I actually watched him fall asleep waiting for a playoff. In a tournament. It was in the 70s sometime. He was in a playoff. Maybe it was 80s or something. And he was in a playoff and just took a little nap for like 10 minutes, just right there after he signed his scorecard. And a lot of guys are sitting there watching the play. What's he going to do? Am I going to be in the playoff or not? And he figured, you know, I need some rest. So he took a nap. Wow. So the last thing was, which is a little risque here, Seve mentioned that taking care of your physical needs was an important aspect of being a single guy and traveling. But his joke was not to do it too efficiently, otherwise you'll be bugged all week. So leave a little
I think
bit
we can fill in the blanks
yeah,
here.
maybe leave a little bit on the table there. So there, you know, those are some things. But again, going back to the warrior parable, you know, it's not so much about golf swing a lot as we want to make it out to be. Like I said earlier, you know, find a reason to get to the golf course, find a reason to compete, and learn from that competition, and understand that you got to dust yourself off, get back up, get back in the game, and go out and do it again and figure out how it's going to work for you the next time. And, you know, we're finding some interesting things, you know, with health and fitness. We're finding some interesting guys that are having some really interesting careers much later at golf than we'd ever expect. You know, Freddie Funk, what an amazing story, you know. He's had some knee problems the last couple of years, but, you know, later in life became a tremendous player. Lauren Roberts, another great story of a guy after 45 winning a bunch of golf tournaments. Vijay Singh, the most winners ever over 40 times winning. That includes Sam Snead after 40. You know, so this is pretty amazing stuff. Guys are learning that it's okay to fail. You just got to keep trying. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great lesson to learn for the average golfer too. You know, you can always get better, you know, and it depends what you want to sacrifice and what you want to do and learn how to, don't always, it's not always that golf tip in the magazine. You know, there's other things out there to get better at and to do. Just don't take it personal. Go out and connect the dots. And if you take five in that hole, that's fine. The next hole, you might take four. Always try to reduce a dot somewhere. If the, you know, my friend just recently played with Freddie Funk down at a private club down in Monterey. And he got done with after the round. He's talking to some of the amateur golfers who he'd set him up to play golf with, a very private club down there. And the amateur said, you know, it's amazing. I played with Freddie today. He shot 65 on these greens out of today, and they were just recently punched. And yet I outdrove him probably three or four times. And I'm a 10 handicap. It's not personal to Fred. If he hit a 260-yard drive, that's fine. If he had hit 5-iron up in the green and the amateur he's playing with hitting 7-iron, okay. I'm not hurt about it. I just got to go up and make my 30-footer, make my 10-footer, get it up and down, go to the next hole, get it done. Just connect the dot.
Get it done.
Get it done. And have fun doing it. Enjoy doing it. That's the thing. Enjoy, you know, that'll keep you coming back if you enjoy the process. You know, that's what I tell my kids that I teach younger kids. I said, learn how to love the process. That's what makes you better. Learning to love the process. You know, my brother was a runner growing up, and I think I learned a little bit of that from him. He was very diligent in his training to long-distance running. And I learned that he just loved going out and swimming 300 laps in the pool. He would do that. He'd get up at 3 in the morning and go run. When it was nice and cool during the middle of summer, he'd run till 5 o'clock in the morning. He'd run for 2 hours. And then he'd run in the evening to get ready, you know. And that's what people do. You adapt to your situation. You do the best you can. And you find your skill sets which work for you. You know, maybe yours is practice. Maybe you're not a practicer. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're a guy that needs more time off. You know, whatever. You find it. But you got to find a reason to get there and compete. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if it's on the club level or if just the friend level. You know, if you have buddies who always play on Thursdays, get that game. And you'll get better. And you'll go through periods where you don't. You know, you have periods where I'm struggling this fall. And then, you know, if it bothers you, you'll do something about it. You know, you'll take care of the elephant that's sleeping in the living room. You'll get rid of him. And if it's you know, suddenly you're chipping bad, you'll find some reason to start chipping better. So anyway, those are just modalities of learning which you can improve upon. And I'm a big believer in keeping a little green notebook in your bag too. And keeping stats. I'm a big stats guy. The stats are more interesting than you think. That, you know, they're not all that, not golf score is always a reward. It's never a goal.
It's not a stat. Golf score is not a stat.
Well, correct. Well, technically, average it is. Your handicap and everything it is. But it's always a result of the things that you did before you hold out on the 18th hole.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's also a result of everything you did before you even got to the first tee.
Sure.
Okay. So preparation. That's the deal. You know. And then after that, once I get there, how do I manage all that preparation in the moment and do that? And then the reward is my score, or the tournament after four rounds. Those are all rewards. They're not goals, you know. I mean, you can kind of tangibly say, I want to be the Pac-10 Player of the Year if I'm a girl or guy, you know, and I want to do that. I want to win the Pac-10 championships, or I want to win the U.S. Amateur. I want to win the state amateur. I want to win the club championship, right? But how do you really go about doing that? You got to break it down into moment, day by day. How do I manage my life to meet those goals and objectives? And that's what a pro can help you do, if you find the right pro.
And the importance of, boy, I didn't want to spend 10 minutes on this, and I have a feeling we will, but the importance of that pro taking you out on the course as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really massively important to go play with a pro. And I'm almost saying, find somebody better to play with.
Yeah.
Get out of your own group. If the guys in front of you are three shots, play with them once a month, twice a month. Once a year, twice a year, whatever you can get into. Go tee it up with the best guy at your club. And you know, just be courteous. Just be etiquette. Most good players are very, very, very courteous. I mean, they understand players that don't play as well. Because you know what? They know what it takes. They know the sacrifice it takes to be the best player at their club, to be the best player in the state. They understand that, believe me. You'd be surprised how understanding good players are of players that can't play very well.
Yeah,
I'm not very understanding of people that think they're better than they are and then won't apply themselves to get better. That I'm very short on, personally. And you'll find most, I mean, as a teacher, I'll try to change that behavior a little bit if I can. if I see that's the real problem with the student. You know?
I'll tell you, it's so funny because we share a barber, and that's how we met, right?
Right.
One of the more entertaining people on the face of the earth.
Correct.
He's one of the few people I've ever met that will tell you how good he is at golf.
Right.
He will go on and on telling you all his great shots, how yep. good he is. Most people you ask, how are you? You ask Tiger, I'm okay. Well, yeah. I'm not that good. No, I'm good. I am really good. And I beat the crap out of that guy last week.
Yeah.
And I did it with this shot. And then I put it in his face.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to videotape him one day.
Oh, yeah,
just
yeah.
put him
he's
up
a,
on
he's
the website.
A, he's sure entertainment. You know, and you know, he's an unusual guy when it comes to that. Usually, my feeling at golf is taking a little lower road and being a little more humble. Because, boy, golf will deliver humble pie pretty quickly.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, in all the times that we've had a chance to chat, you dropped one little tidbit here that I'm not going to let go, and I want to bring it up right now if you don't mind sharing it with me. You competed in the U.S. Open?
I did. I actually played in one U.S. Open in 1987 here at the Olympic Club. And it was a fun, really... interesting experience for me. I was a low qualifier here at the SF Club. And that was fun. I had the previous in 85 when they had qualifying at SF Club, I lost in a playoff to get into the Open, and I'd been first alternate two other times for a couple other Opens in those days. But yeah, I was able to play in the US Open and had a pretty good golf tournament. I missed the cut by a shot or two, and I think I shot 149.
But one of the things you said to me was you led.
I did, after about six holes. Late in the first round, I birdied a couple holes early, and I think I was tied with Bernard Langer.
I mean, there's guys.
I'm not much of a scoreboard guy. You know, it's funny about that Open for me. I have probably never felt more relaxed in a golf tournament my whole life.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and I don't know. I've tried to look back on that, and I
were you really? Are you very comfortable on that golf course? Do you know the course really well?
Well, I played in the U.S. Amateur there in '81.
Okay,
but the golf course, and this is interesting. Most people probably don't understand that. It was the condition of the golf course was night and day. So it was like two different golf courses.
Mm.
And the location was the same. But the conditions were extremely... The fairways in the Open were fast and firm. And the rough was extremely high. And the greens were just lightning. I mean, the greens were so fast, they were putting nitrogen... some sort of chemical on them to make them grow. Because the growing conditions are so good in the Bay Area for golf, especially in June. You get just a little bit of sunshine, and those are Poe greens. At least in those days, they were all Poe greens, and they burn out pretty quickly. People don't know what Poe is. It's Poe annual. It's a weed, actually. It's not really a grass that most greens in California are pretty predominantly used, especially in moderate climate weather, hotter where Poe doesn't work very well. But so... The greens were growing perfect. They were growing way too fast. I remember standing and hitting a chip shot on 18 from the front of the green and watching the ball roll all the way back towards the bunker, you know, just hitting chip shots. So, I played in the amateur there. It was pretty much set up like it was for everyday play in 81 when Nathaniel Crosby won in 81. And actually, that was a fun tournament for me, too, playing that. I think I played with Paul Azinger his last amateur round of golf, which was kind of fun. Mm. He turned pro right after that. But, yeah, I was relaxed, I think, because... it was reward. That's how I looked at it. I'd spent a lot of years. That was 1987. I picked up a golf club in 19.
And it didn't matter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't go
that's another thing, too.
You go thinking, I'm going to win this thing.
I just felt
I made it.
Well, I just got invited to the party.
Yeah.
And you know, I really felt like I belonged there. I felt like these were guys I liked being around. These are people I had something in common with.
Neat.
You know what? I like being around these guys like
this.
Very
cool.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I will say this. I was playing a practice round, and probably the most nervous I've ever been at golf. I was, you know, what people may not understand this, when you play in a major championship like an Open or you know, PGA, Masters, whatever, there's usually when you sign in during the week, there's a little ceremony when you sign in. You usually sign a book and, you know, maybe sign some official forms. In those days, I think they gave us cars for the week, so you're signing off on the car and stuff. And you get to sign up for your starting times. So if especially at Open, if you see Tiger Woods' name down at 7 o'clock on Sunday morning or on Tuesday morning, you just sign your name right next to it and you're playing with Tiger.
Wow.
Done deal.
Wow.
So, you know, man up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I
what'd you do?
I didn't do that, but I played with some of my former – I played at UCLA, so I was playing with some of my former college buddies, and I coached there for a little while too. And so Steve Pate, I'd scheduled a couple practice rounds with him, and – So I'm out playing with Steve, and we're playing on the first hole. In those days, well, it still is, the back tee at the first hole at Olympic Club is really small. I mean, it's, you know, it's dining room size, you know. And so we're standing there. I'm standing there waiting for Steve, and we've got, I don't know what time it was. It was like a Monday or something, or a Tuesday, and no Steve. And I'm getting, well, where the hell is he? I saw him up in the driving range a few minutes ago. Where is he? And all of a sudden, up walks Tom Watson. I go, so he's standing there, and we're all standing, like, he's 2 feet away, 3 feet away from me. How you doing? Good. Are you the time up now? I said, yeah, I'm the time up now. I'm waiting for Steve Pate. Oh, I know Steve, yeah. So he didn't even introduce himself to me. And I didn't introduce himself to him. So then
but you knew who he was.
Yeah, knew he was.
He didn't know who you were. And then
Tom Kite walks up, right? So these are like little some of my idols growing up.
Right.
You know? I mean, these guys are a few years ahead. They're like, you know, 7, 8, 10 years ahead of me, you know, maybe a few years more. And so these are guys that I kind of looked up to, right? And or did look up to, not kind of. And so now I got Kite standing there, and I've got Watson standing there. And then Trevino walks up. So now I'm thinking I may have to play with these two guys. If you know, then the option may come up. They may invite me. They don't have to invite me because it's not their responsibility to invite me. Sure. I got my caddy standing there. So Steve doesn't. I've got the fun. I see Steve coming down the side of the hill there.
And you're going, go away. Go back.
No, you know, I was actually pretty comfortable with not playing with those guys. I mean, I probably should have been more excited about that opportunity. But at the time, I was thinking I really wasn't hitting it that well in practice rounds. I was kind of struggling a little bit. And I'm thinking, I should have been a little bit more gutty about that one. But I remember trying to hit that ball off the first tee, and that was probably the most nervous I was all week. Because I birdied three of the last four holes coming in. I was finally starting to get a feel for the golf course, and it was playing hard and fast, which I like because I was a low ball hitter, and I don't hit it pretty straight, and so I like that sort of format. But so it was a good experience for me. I wish I'd played in some more Opens. I'd like to play in some senior Opens. I haven't played very well the last few years, but I'd like to go about and play in a couple senior Opens. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a reward for me. You know, I mean, I've spent.
Sure.
Like, you know, like I was beginning to say, I mean, I picked up a golf club probably in 1966, and so here I am playing in the U.S. Open in 1987. So I'd really been at it 21 years. Mm. You know, competitively. I'd been at it since probably 1972, so I'd been at it for 15 years competitively, pretty much nonstop. And, you know, everything I did in my life was pretty much revolved around becoming a better golfer. You know, whether it was just trying to be a better person, a better student so I could play more golf, you know, whatever. And traveling and staying in some really strange places under unusual circumstances. Yeah, you know, and they're, you know, they may not have been so fun. They seem a little bit more exotic and entertaining later in life, but when you're sitting in a hotel room in Fiji and it's, you know, and it's raining for 2 days and, you know, you've played your 3,000th game of gin and, you know, you've just finished the last you've reread your book for the fourth time right, exactly. So all those stuff, and you know, everybody that's played the game for a long time has those stories. So They're interesting, but it was a reward for me, and I wish I could have played some more, quite frankly.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Now, most golfers, and those listening, I'm sure know of some of your work, but don't even know it's your work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the other little thing in my life. You got to make a living somewhere, because I was just basically a glorified AAA baseball player, you know, as it relates to golf. I got called up a few times, like a U.S. Open here, occasional PGA Tour event.
You were at the show.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah, exactly. But then it was soon back to back to Bull Durham. Which was interesting in itself. I mean, I played a lot of mini tour players that were really good. You know, I played a lot of mini tour stuff with a lot of guys that were really good.
Share with everybody what it is that we know about you that we don't know that it's
well,
you.
Okay, I basically...
Did you invent this?
Nah, sort of. I mean, it was being done before me, the sprinkler marker. On sprinkler heads.
Right. So if you're ever playing a golf course and you're trying to figure out what your distance is to the hole, and you look down and you're walking around looking for a sprinkler head because the distance
is on the sprinkler head, right.
That's your company.
Could be. I have competitors, and when I started out.
Yeah, they suck.
Well, I'll say we have our strong points at my company, Grunguide. www.grunguide.com, by the way. But
three W's.
Three W's, yeah.
And you know what? You probably don't even need to put www.
Yeah, probably Grund
Guide. Just Grund Guide, GURNDGUIDE.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, I started, I got lucky. I'd always, you know, again, always trying to skin the cat and find out what my strengths were. A lot of it was preparation for me. I learned through playing football and baseball, especially football. I had some guys that were really good coaches when I was a kid, and they taught me a lot about being ready. And they were military guys, both Marines, and taught me about being prepared and being ready to go out and play. And I found that one of my strengths was I couldn't overpower a golf course because I didn't hit it very far. I needed to understand that golf course and how I could apply my game to it. And one of the ways I could do that was walking off yardage, making green, keeping my charts on green depths, keeping my own stats on what I did on certain holes and how I'd play them and that sort of thing. So part of that involved some mapping, and I had a little bit of artistic skill to go with it. So I started out making yardage books when I was playing mini tours. I sold some of the books to some of the other players, and then by keeping those notes, I also found that, wait a minute, one of the guys that I did this for said, I'd like to put some yardages on my sprinkler heads. How could we do that? And because in those days, they were gluing like little tags onto the heads in the mid-'80s. And so I said, well, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so I started looking at it and saying, how would you image a sprinkler head? And so I started thinking about that, and I started doing it in different ways that had never been done before, and then continued doing it to this day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's just been so much fun having you here. And I have a sense that there are a lot of people with a lot of questions. So let me encourage you to go to golfsmarter.com and click on the Hey Fred button. And if you have any questions for John, I'm sure, you know, we're almost neighbors. I'm sure we can get him back on the show, and maybe we can find a way to get him to do some video tips for us
right.
as well.
Okay.
On the website, because when I arrived here today, he was over on the putting green and he did some magic for me over there. And I was like, oh my God, this guy is perfect for video. So we've got to figure out how we're going to be able to do this, get
okay.
some video and stuff.
Yeah.
But we really appreciate you coming by
and
being on the show. We didn't get to talk about any of these people on the driving range, unfortunately.
Well, it's not fair if they can't respond back. Come on now.
That's the whole point.
John, thanks
okay,
so
thanks,
much.
Thanks, Fred. Okay.
Hey, I'm serious about getting John to do some video lessons for us as well, but, you know, it's really up to you. If he recognizes how active our Golf Smarter community is, then he'll be more inclined to participate. So please send in your questions, and let's see what he has to say in response. I'll forward those questions. Go to, you know, click on the Hey Fred button, ask the experts at golfsmarter.com, and I'll forward the questions to him and see what he has to say. And talking about submitting questions, I received an email this week from Eric in Albany, New York, asking for conditioning advice because he's, quote, struggling to get my hips and shoulders open up at impact like the pros, end quote. So if you'd like to see the answer from a TPI certified instructor, Titleist Performance Institute certified instructor, Ann Grassel, it's posted on our blog with this week's show notes. And let me tell you that Ann is going to be on our show soon. So if you have any questions or issues with your swing, it just may be related to your conditioning. And that's what's so nice about having a TPI certified instructor who's not just a physical therapist or a golf instructor, but somebody who's really well versed on the physical condition and the golf swing and how they work together. Click on Ask the Experts at golfsmarter.com to submit your question, and I'll ask Ann your question when we record that interview. Time for our prize giveaway, and this week we'd like to congratulate Golf Smarter member Dr. Craig Bloom of Lafayette, California. Craig, we're going to send you an autographed copy of Tom Coyne's A Course Called Ireland, just in time for Hanukkah. I actually know that he doesn't celebrate Christmas. By the way, my favorite rant about Tiger's escapade with his Escalade is from Current.com, and I've posted the link on our Golf Smarter Facebook group. You should check that out. It's pretty funny. Isn't it amazing how the attention has gone from Tiger's putter to his putts this offseason? Oof, man, it's such a long time till we start the Masters again, and I hope he wins it this year so we can get back to hearing about his golf game. We close with a quote pulled from Stan Utley's book, The Art of Scoring, in the chapter titled The Putting Strategy Guide. He says, quote, "Believe it or not, the way to make more putts is not trying to make more putts. Control the things you can control: information, preparation, and your stroke. And realize you do not control the rest. If you can stop focusing on the hole and trust this question-asking process, you're going to make more putts in the end. I realize that's a tough thing to accept, but it's true. Next week, chasing the dream of playing at the 2010 U.S. Open and Open Championship with Jacob Bowden. If you have any questions, quotes, or comments, I'd love to hear from you. Just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.